Good morning. Welcome to winter. Just curious, how many of you have ever even heard, let's do this. How many of you have never heard of frozen fog? I've never heard of frozen fog. But there's a frozen fog warning in the northern counties, and I think it froze here too. At least it looked like that on the trees. Just a dreary day outside, so I'm glad to be in here in the warmth, aren't you? We're going to continue our series today called Christmas Unwrapped. And if you were here last week, I told you we are looking at different symbols of Christmas, different things that come out at Christmas and what they can mean to us as believers. Last week, we covered something simple, and it was lights. So you got lights on the Christmas tree, you got lights going up in people's yards, or as Elijah calls them, colors. Today, we're going to talk about the star. Because oftentimes on top of our Christmas trees, we'll put a star. Nowadays, I don't know when this started, but we put bows. There's a bow on my Christmas tree. There's a bow on my mother-in-law's Christmas tree. There's a bow on that Christmas tree. So I guess I could have talked about bows and what that could represent. But most of the time, you put stars on top of the Christmas tree. This is some type of Pinterest trend, I guess, that we started. But also, a lot of times in the decorations you see in people's yards, you'll see a star. I think my uncle actually makes some of those stars, and then you can put lights on them. But I remember growing up, we had a star that would hang on our front porch. And in fact, Mom had it out when I went to pick up Elijah the other day, and it looked like that. And, you know, we've helped a bunch of churches, and so I've been in a lot of churches' junk closets, and I seem to always find this star, exact same star, in every church's junk closet. So I don't know if that was something that maybe the government handed out to everybody at some point or something. I don't know. But it seems like everybody had that star. And that star, of course, represents the star of Bethlehem that we're going to talk about today in Matthew chapter 2. Let's dive into it. Starting with the first two verses, introduces all the key characters here. It says, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, magi from the east came to Jerusalem, and they asked, where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose, and we have come to worship him. So let's take those first two verses to cover who are the people involved here. First person that we need to talk about is King Herod. To start off with, he's not a good dude. He is the ruler of Judea, which is where the Jews were mainly centered, and he was placed there by Rome. He is not truly a king. He is not truly in power. He does everything at the Rome's beckoning. So he is what would be called a vassal king almost. He's also not the king of the Jews. He's just a self-proclaimed king of the Jews. He considered himself the king of the Jews because that's where the Jewish people were, where he would rule. The Jews did not view him that way. The Jews have very little respect for him. He's a bad guy. From history, and even in this story, we can tell that Herod was apparently a very paranoid ruler. He was so afraid at losing his throne and losing his power. And so any challenger to his throne, he would seek to destroy. In fact, I found this quote from historians I thought was fascinating. They said, it would be better to be one of Herod's pigs than one of his sons. Why is that? The pig can't take his throne, but a son can. And so it'd be better to be something that he's probably going to eat than to be his own flesh and born, because he would have them put to death, because he didn't want anybody to come and take his throne. So Herod's not a good guy. The Magi come from the east. They were a class of people from the eastern nations, most likely from Babylon or Persia. Interesting that we just came out of the series in Daniel, where the Magi are key characters in the whole book of Daniel. In fact, Daniel himself was the leader of this class of people. these people traveled somewhere around 700 to 900 miles to get to Judea, to get to Bethlehem, get to Jerusalem at this point. And it wasn't just a few of them. It was a whole group of people, and we'll read later that all of Jerusalem was disturbed. So it's not just the three wise men that we typically have in our pictures and in our nativity scenes, etc. In fact, there's nowhere in Scripture that says it was just three. I've heard some people say it was three, and then they had a whole caravan of people with them, but it could have been 100 wise men. We don't know how many wise men they are. Just the tradition is that it was three because three gifts were given to Jesus. But that could have been, it could have been 300. We don't know. But we do know that they would have traveled with a whole group of people. They would have their entourage with them, their families with them. These were some people who were high up in the Eastern nation society. So these wise men, or you hear them referred to as wise men, as magi, they are not kings, even though the song says that we three kings. They are not kings. The reason why that is sometimes misinterpreted is because there is a verse in Scripture that says kings from foreign nations will come to worship Jesus. They are not kings. Are they high up? Yes, but they're not kings. They are, and this sounds very similar to what we covered in Daniel, they are scholars, they are astrologers, they are advisors, they study ancient texts, they interpret dreams, they advise politically, they are a who's who of society. And it's the same group that Daniel was over. Now the Magi were obviously studying the stars when this bright star appeared. And this lines up with them being astrologers. You're going to be looking at the sky if you're an astrologer. It had to be an unusual star for them to note it. And they somehow, and I'm going to get into how I think this happened, but they connect this star to Numbers 24:17 from the Old Testament. And it says this: a star will come out of Jacob, and a scepter will rise out of Israel. Now, the scepter represents a king, represents a ruler. And so they said, hey, there's that star. It would have been to the west of them because they came from the east. They said it's towards the direction of Jacob, and it must have been a star that was unusual for them to note it. And they said, Numbers 24:17, a king has been born. A king is now present there. I think it's very likely that because of Daniel's impact in the Babylonian and Persian empires, that is why these magi are present here in Matthew chapter 2. I think because Daniel was such a leader when he was taken captive into these empires, I think he taught the Jewish scriptures. I think he made sure these people knew the Jewish scriptures, even though they were not believers in God. I think that the Magi, that class of people, had the Jewish scriptures and were studying the Jewish scriptures because of the impact Daniel made. Now, Daniel was in these empires 500 to 600 years before Jesus was born. And God was laying the groundwork for these Magi to make this trip to worship Jesus 500 to 600 years before. That's pretty amazing to see God orchestrating everything together hundreds and hundreds of years before. Reminds me of a verse in Ephesians 1:11 where it says that God works out everything in conformity with the purpose of his will. We just sang how he is the one who was and is to come. I read you the verse that he is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. He can see the future. He can see 300 years down the road. He can see 500 years down the road. He knows exactly what needs to happen. And so what he was doing, I think, with Daniel and with Israel in Babylon and in the Persian Empire, he was setting up these magi to make this trip to worship Jesus that we're still reading about in 2025. And so I want you to keep that in mind as we continue to talk today, because it will come in key play later. So what was the star? Well, we know the star was very bright and unique for them to notice it. It would make sense for it had been to the west of the Magi since they traveled from the east. And a naturally occurring star would have risen in the east and set in the west, and it would have moved in a very predictable line. That, I mean, even today, they can track where the stars are going to be at every minute of the day because stars are going to move in a predictable line. Some scholars and astronomers have tried to guess what the star may have been. In fact, I don't know how they determined this. I don't know if it's written down from history or if we have just had the technology to go back and track when these alignments could have taken place. But Jesus was born somewhere in the 7 BC to 2 BC time frame. We don't know exactly in that time frame, but somewhere in that time frame. And in 7 BC, Jupiter and Saturn aligned, and it obviously, when a planet's aligned, they shine a little bit brighter. It would have been something unusual that would have happened. In fact, at that time, they have evidence that the Magi viewed Saturn as representing Jerusalem or Judea, and Jupiter represented royalty. So they connected to the two together to say, hey, this lines up with numbers. In 6 BC, Mars joined Jupiter and Saturn. So you had a three planetary alignment, three planets that align together. And then in 2 BC, Venus and Jupiter aligned. So it could have been a planetary alignment that made them say, hey, that star looks different. Hey, we need to follow that star. You'll hear later why I don't think that's what it was. I did find it fascinating that they have evidence from Chinese and Korean astronomers that they wrote down that a new star had appeared around 5 to 4 BC, and it was only visible for 70 days and disappeared. So from the Chinese and Korean countries at the time, I think they recorded the Star of Bethlehem, not knowing what it was, but they saw it. They could make it out. Yet this star doesn't meet the standard for a typical star because, we're going to skip a few verses here, then we'll head back. After they meet with King Herod, in verse 9 it says this, they went on their way, and the star that they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. So typically a star is going to move from the east to the west. This star, they're in Jerusalem when they meet with the king. We know the star stops over Bethlehem because that's where Jesus was. By the way, Jesus is not a baby when the wise men come and visit him. Jesus is a toddler, an infant. He's at least a year old probably, or within that time frame. This is not fresh out of the womb. Our nativity scenes don't really line up with that either. In fact, I heard on K-Love the other day, which I'm like, should y'all be on K-Love if y'all don't know? The question was who was the first ones to visit Jesus? And they said the wise men. And I was like, no, they came later. And eventually someone got it right. They said the shepherds, but the technical answer would have been the animals. But anyway, the star moves from Jerusalem to Bethlehem. Now, Bethlehem is 6 miles south of Jerusalem. So this star does not move from west to east. This star moved from north to south, at least at this point. This is a star that doesn't follow the typical rules. So what could it have been? Some scholars have wondered if it was an angel shining brightly in the distance and moving. It could have been a light that God just made specifically for this purpose. And the best way to describe it was that it was a star. In fact, that would align with what we see in other times in the scripture, especially in the Old Testament, when God led his people with light in the wilderness. This is in Exodus chapter 13. It says, by the day the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light so that they could travel by day or night. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left its place in front of the people. So this pillar of fire would appear at night and lead them would direct them, would guide them through the wilderness. And that light represented the Lord's presence that was with them. I find it interesting that God appears as a light in the Old Testament in the wilderness when, as we covered last week, at the time of Jesus' birth, God's people are in the wilderness again. They've not heard from God really in 400 years. They've been under the rule of other countries. And the Magi themselves, I would say, are in the wilderness, because when you don't know God, you are. And what did God do? He sent the light. He sent a star to guide them to the one who is the light. And so what I want us to think about when we see the star at Christmas is God's guidance. That God is willing and wanting to guide us in our life, just as he guided the Magi. We see this both in the Old Testament and in this story with the Magi. And I know that God will guide those who seek his guidance. But it requires people to seek his guidance, and that's the key. How often do we just go through life not seeking his guidance? I thought about this. What would happen if the Magi didn't at least know of the scripture prophesying about the star rising, announcing the birth of the king of the Jews? They would have been just like the Chinese astrologers who just said, hey, this bright light has appeared, this new star has appeared, and it disappeared 70 days later. That star meant nothing to them, but because the Magi at least knew the scriptures, the star meant something. They had sought God at least enough to know what it meant. Proverbs 3:5-6 says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not depend on your own understanding. Seek his will in all you do, and he will show you which path to take. Seek his will. Seek his guidance, and he will show you. That's the guidance that God provides. Let me ask you today, are you seeking his guidance? Or are you just wandering through life, missing the guidance that God is wanting to provide? We make a mess when we try to direct our own paths. Israel was in the wilderness, which is a good analogy for what it's like to walk our own path. Have you ever been deep in the woods in a place that you're not familiar with? For those of you that hunt, you're probably familiar with your hunting grounds. You're probably familiar with where you're at. But have you ever been, for me, I've been in the Birkhead Wilderness, and if there was not trails and signs, I would not make it out of the wilderness. I remember one of them, we went down, it's called Camp 3 Trail, and at one point you could tell you were in the middle of nowhere, no cell phone service. You were down in between two mountains in a creek, and you had to basically climb straight up to get out of it. Boy, we were out of breath by the time we got up. I don't think I could have made it out of there if I did not have a trail guiding me. And then if I lost the trail, nowadays we have a compass, we have a phone, things that can lead you out. But listen, you don't have that type of stuff in the real world. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a compass or an iPhone to tell us where to go and what decisions to make in life? See, life is its own type of wilderness. And we don't have the means that we have in the actual wilderness to get out, like a compass or a phone that will show us how to go. I wish I had something that would tell me, hey, you're making the right decision here. Hey, this is the right path for you to take. Hey, you're doing the correct thing here. I wish I had something that said, hey, if you head this way, this is the right decision. But we don't. We do, and that's the point of today's sermon, but we don't in this world itself. Instead, we're in the wilderness, not knowing if we're making the right decision until we see what happens. And then we can look back and say, okay, that was the wrong decision. We don't know what direction to head in life. We don't know what to do. And so let me ask you, if you have a choice to make, do you try to figure it out yourselves? Or do you seek something or someone greater? If you're like me, you've probably done a little bit of both. There's been times in my life where I've went my own way, done my own thing, did not take time to seek God's guidance, and just went on and done it, and it's created a mess for me. There's been other times, though, where I did seek God's guidance, and He led me in the right path. And you might be thinking, okay, well, when do we seek God's guidance? Is it only with certain decisions? And I think for Christians, at least, we tend to seek God's guidance for the big decisions of life. Like, do I date this person or not? Do I go to this college or not? Do I take this job or not? Do I buy this house? When do we have children? Do I have this surgery? Do I retire now or do I retire later? All of those can be life-altering decisions. And when we know that we're making a life-altering decisions, those are the times when Christians, at least, will seek God's guidance, because we know that if we make the wrong choice here, it can lead us down the wrong path. But what about the small decisions? The ones that are seemingly insignificant. Like, do I say this to this person? Or how do I approach this situation? Or what should my priorities be today? What should I eat today? What should I listen to today? Do I join this conversation or not? Should I make this purchase or not? Those are decisions that not many people seek God's guidance about, even though we probably should. I'm very guilty of just going through life not seeking His guidance, especially on those small decisions. And you know what? It's created problems for me in my life. I was trying to think. I knew that at one time, I remember I was making a decision on what to do the next day, and I didn't know if I should come down here and work or should I take off, because I remember that Sarah and the kids were going to be at home. And I remember this nudge from God was like, take off, stay at home. And that happened to be the day that Sarah's dad passed away. And Sarah would not have been able to get there to spend those last moments with her dad if I had not been at home to take Elijah. And so that was a time where, was I really seeking His advice, like through prayer necessarily? No, but I was at least aware of His guidance. I was at least aware of His presence. And I felt that nudge to change my routine, even though I'm a man of routine. And so then I thought, well, okay, if I don't seek God's guidance at all times like I should, why do we not do that? Well, first, part of it is because I think we use our own wisdom. In fact, this is just me thinking. I wonder if the Magi used their own wisdom, and that's why they ended up in Jerusalem and not Bethlehem, where the star was. Because when you know the king has been born, it makes sense to go to the capital, and it makes sense to go to the palace to see this king. And so I wonder if the Magi were thinking, okay, we got to go to Jerusalem, the king of the Jews, that's their capital, that's where they're at. Let's go there and let's just go worship this king. But we know for a fact that the star later leads them to Bethlehem and stops right over the house. So then my question becomes, did the star lead them to the wrong place at first and then lead them south? Or did they go to Jerusalem in their own pride and their own wisdom, and then God said, no, 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 He's down here? And I thought maybe, okay, well, maybe they went to Jerusalem because they had to go to Jerusalem to fulfill some type of prophecy. Well, I could not find any prophecy that could only be fulfilled by the Magi going to Jerusalem. So I really think they kind of lost their eye on the star. And they said, okay, in Judea, go to Jerusalem, go see this king. And because they did that, they end up meeting a bad king. And luckily, it didn't distract them for too long, but it did distract them a little bit, and we'll get to that in a second. I thought about how that applies in our own lives as well. I do know that we don't seek God's guidance like we should, and we start to use our own wisdom out of our own pride. I don't think we're thinking that we're being prideful, but I do think we say, okay, this is what we've done in the past, this is what makes sense today. We use our own wisdom, and when we use our own wisdom, we end up where we shouldn't be. We end up in trouble. We end up with people that we shouldn't be with. We end up saying something we shouldn't say. We end up causing a lot of trouble in our life and in the lives of others because we took the eye off of the star. Second thing that I think happens, though, is we get distracted. And there's an enemy out there that is going to try to distract us. I think that can be seen here in Matthew 2 as well, or at least an attempt made here by Herod. Remember, Herod is a bad guy. Let's pick it up in verse 3. The Magi, they've come into Jerusalem with all their people. King Herod heard this, and he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the chief priests, all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. And they told him, "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for one will come a ruler, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Thought comes to me right now that I didn't include when I was going through this, but why did the Magi not recognize this scripture? Because what he just quoted was Matthew 5, 2 and 4. If the Magi had known this scripture, they would have went to Bethlehem. They wouldn't have went to Jerusalem. Or maybe they did know this scripture and they just got distracted once again. I don't know. So Herod continued, verse 7 through 8. Herod called the Magi secretly, and they found out the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. And as soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." Number one, I want you to know King Herod's not wanting to worship Jesus. Remember, he's a paranoid ruler that would kill his own sons so that they didn't take his throne. And these Magi, probably hundreds of people, just showed up in Jerusalem to worship Jesus, to worship the newborn king of the Jews. He wants to kill Jesus. In fact, later on, he kills every male boy under 2 years old in this area. We know that when King Herod's reign came to an end, that's how we know about the time Jesus was born. I think it was 2 BC, if I remember correctly. So we know Jesus was born before 2 BC. And for him to give that order, and that also tells us that Jesus was probably under 2 years old when that order was given. So number one, this is not so that Herod can worship him. It's so that Herod can kill him. Number two, all of this is just a distraction for the Magi. Who knows how long it took for Herod to call in his chief people and for them to go and study the scriptures and say he's supposed to be here, and then he calls the Magi in. I wonder, I mean, let's say days passed here and the Magi are wandering around Jerusalem wondering where this king is. I don't know necessarily what the Magi are doing, how long it took, but let's say that they're just wandering around saying, "Where is this king?" when they could have just followed the star that's about to take them to Bethlehem, where the true king is. They got distracted. They're wasting time when they should be going straight to Jesus. I want you to know today that the devil is going to try to distract you as well. He's going to try to draw our attention away from following God's guidance. So I think the first thing that we have to do is we have to be aware of everything that could draw us away from God's guidance. And I'm about to give you a list here. Be aware of everything that could draw us away from God's guidance. There's a ton of different things that could lead us away from God. And I'm not going to cover them all, but what I am going to do, God really took me to Israel lost in the wilderness as an example for us. And so let's go and look. I'm not going to read the scriptures because it'll take too much time, but let's look at what led Israel away from God's guidance in the wilderness. Because if you know the story from the Old Testament, God might be guiding them, but they're not always following. They get distracted by all these things. And let's talk about some of those distractions. I'm just going to have a list up here. First distraction could be bad circumstances. For them, they didn't have food and they had enemies all around them. They got to the point where they said, "Can we go back to Egypt? Can we go back to slavery? because we don't have food here. For us, it might be sickness. It might be situations. It might be something in our life that's saying, I am distracted by this. I'm going to do what I think I need to do because I need to get out of this. Or at least need to numb this away or whatever. What really should happen is when the circumstances are bad, it should make us desperate enough to seek God before we do something or take something else. Second thing is the past. This one's key for me. For them, for Israel, they wanted to return to Egypt because they felt like they had things better than them. And, you know, little did they know the greatness that God had in store for them. But for us, it can be shame, it can be pain, it can be hurt, it can be things from our past that is affecting our future, causing us not step out into what God has called us to, into where God is guiding us. We've got to let God's guidance override anything that we have from our past, which kind of leads into the next one, is fear. For me, I have fear linked to the past, which is why I'm afraid to let God guide at times, because what he calls me to do is outside of my comfort because of pain that I've experienced in the past. For Israel, it was giants and fortified cities. They were worried about all the enemies that were all around, so they had fear of all this. So we have fear of getting hurt. We have fear that we might make the wrong decision. We have fear that if you take this step, that things won't work out. I am so impressed with people that have changed jobs, even when it didn't make sense financially. They've changed jobs because God told them to. And they're happier because of it. They're more Christ-like because of it. That's impressive to me, that they took that step, even though they probably had some fear associated with that. Let's continue on. Idolatry. For them, if you know the story in the Old Testament, they build a golden calf and start worshiping it. Hopefully you're not building a golden calf, but for us, idolatry is anything that comes above God. And boy, do we have a lot in our world today that can distract us and become our God in our lives and distract us from seeking his guidance. Next one would be people. They had some bad leaders. Now, Moses was a good leader, but they get led astray to build the golden calf because they have bad leaders. For us, it might be bad guidance from other people. You can get bad guidance from people around you that can cause you to be distracted from what God is calling you to do. The next one would be impatience, and this one hits home with me too. Make rash decisions without taking time to seek God's guidance. I enjoy leading, especially in the moment when you have to make a quick decision and get things done. That's one thing I do miss about Food Lion, is when the rush would come in, which I'm sure they're going to be busy today because we might get snow tomorrow. I do miss those days, and I don't miss those days. But I enjoy the rush that happens, and people are asking me things, and I'm just making decision. And I find myself doing that today, even though I actually have time to take a moment to pray, seek God's guidance. But often I'm impatient, and I just move right along. Pride, we've already talked about this. They use their own wisdom. We can use our own wisdom. And, of course, the enemy. I mean, the enemy is going to do everything he can to lead you away from God's guidance. And so what we need to do is we need to be aware of which one of these, and this is not an exhaustive list, but I do think it covers a lot, which one of these can distract us from God's guidance? Which one of these do we tend to be distracted by the most? And I want you to think about that in your head right now. Which one of those distracts you the most? I already told you what mine are: the past, fear, and impatience. And so I've got to be sure to try to counteract that. Second thing we got to do is when we know what distracts us, we can avoid this and be aware of this. But then the second thing you've got to do is you've got to seek God. And I did an acronym thing because I'm a pastor. So here's the first part of the acronym. You got to surrender your will. Surrender your will. And this goes back to the pride issue. You've got to say, God, I don't know what to do. And going back to the wilderness example, me in the Birkhead Wilderness or in the Yari Forest, if I didn't have my phone and I didn't have a compass, I would be completely lost. I'd probably just start walking in one direction and I hope I make it out of the woods eventually. But in this life, if I picture this life as being like being in the Birkhead Wilderness without any help, that's going to make me seek God more. And so I want you to think about life like that, that this is the wilderness, and that you don't have the power within yourself to make it out of this wilderness. You don't know the path to get out. And so you need to seek the one that does. That first starts with surrendering your will, saying, God, I don't know what I'm doing. God, I don't know how to live this life. God, I am desperate for your guidance. I bet you would be desperate if you spent 3 days in the wilderness and couldn't get out. Listen, you're just as desperate now without God's guidance as you would be then. So we need to surrender our will. Second thing we need to do is we need to engage in prayer. Now we're going to talk about how do you seek his guidance. Well, first it's by prayer. Simple conversation with God. God, I need guidance in this. God, I need help with this. Thought about James 1:5. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. In other words, James says, just ask, and he will give you wisdom generously. Just ask for guidance, and he will give it to you. We don't take the moment to pray. We don't take the moment because we're impatient to say, God, what do you want me to do? What do I say here? Do I say this to this person or do I say this to this person? Or do I not say anything? How do you want me to handle this situation? Now, we'll often go to God and pray about, hey, do I quit my job or do I not? Do I do this or do I not? But we need to take time throughout the day to engage in prayer. And then when we engage in prayer, it's not just about asking God. It's about taking time to listen to. Saying, I'm going to be still for a second. Our young adults group on Monday nights covering prayer. And what we covered this past week was that we need to start our prayer time with just stillness. And the book that we're working through talks about how that's a sacrifice that pleases God, that you're choosing to be still in a world that is hurried. How much does it please God to see us take time out of our day to engage him in prayer? I think it puts a smile on his face. So engage in prayer. Third, examine his word. That one's simple. The word provides us with directions. If we need guidance in our life, his word is there. In fact, Psalms 119:105 says, your word is a lamp for my feet and a light on my path. If you want to know, for example, there's some things that are very clear on how God is guiding us. If you have an enemy, do I slap them across the face or do I not? The word is clear. I don't do what I want to do. Instead, I love my enemy and I turn the other cheek. So the word is clear on some things. Some things you need God's guidance on, but the word is clear, so we need to be examining his word to see if it's black and white in here, then we just need to go with what the word says. Yes, you can pray about it too, but if the word is clear, we follow the word above all else. His guidance will always align with the word. See, I think for some people, you might engage in prayer, but you're questioning, is what I'm hearing me or God? Well, one way to see if it's God is to see if it aligns with his word, to see if it aligns with the values that he tells us to live and how he tells us to live in our life. The fourth thing we got to do as part of the seek is we got to keep pursuing his presence. This is where it's different for us than the Magi. The Magi, they come to the house in verse 11. It says this, on coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and they worshiped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream, so that tells me God's still guiding them. Having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. So they didn't go up through Jerusalem, they went a different way. So they came and they presented their gifts to Jesus. They worshiped Jesus. Scripture tells us they bowed down and worshiped him. They obviously have great respect for who Jesus is and as the King of the Jews, and maybe even as God. We don't know. I don't think that they probably view Jesus very much like Nebuchadnezzar viewed Daniel's God, as just another god in a pantheon of gods. But they do seem to be seeking his presence and worshiping him to a degree. But for them, once they leave, Jesus didn't go with them. In fact, if they wanted Jesus' guidance, they had to go back to Jesus wherever he was. For us, it's different. For us, God goes with us. Once we make that initial step, which is often where we focus when we talk about the Magi, the wise men, we talk about bringing your gifts to God, worshiping God, and the greatest gift you can bring is yourself. And that's true. That's where it starts for us. You pursue his presence, and the great thing is once you pursue his presence, he goes with you. So for that, scripture says he indwells within us and he comes with us. John 16:13, Jesus says, when he, the Spirit of truth, comes, he will guide you into all the truth. Paul tells us the Spirit lives in us. So the great thing about us today in 2025 is that we don't have to go to a certain place to seek God's guidance. Instead, we have the person within us that will guide us. We just have to be aware of his guidance. We have to be aware of his presence. We have to continually be aware of his presence. And so this is something that we've got to do daily. Got to keep pursuing his presence, keep pursuing his guidance in our life. And for us, I think that's in two ways. First, it's in the intentional ways, which is engaging in prayer and examining his word. But also, I think it's what's called practicing the presence of God. Being aware that God is with you and being aware of those little nudges that God could give. A good example for me would be the day that I decided to stay at home, the same day that Sarah's father passed away. That was God giving me a nudge that I just happened to be aware of because I knew God was there. And so, recap for you. Worship team, you can come on up. The star represents God's guidance. We need to be aware of everything that can distract us from God's guidance. We need to surrender our will, engage him in prayer, examine his word, keep pursuing his presence. But the way I want to end is just emphasizing, where does this start? It starts with the word that's over here, seeking God. More than that, it's not just about seeking God when you need him, like you're Aladdin looking for the genie in the bottle. It's about seeking God as the Lord of the universe. It's about seeking God not out of selfish motives, not just because you want him to do what you want him to do. Instead, you seek him because you want to worship him. You want to make him the king of your life, the Lord of your life, and you want to follow everything he says. For the Magi, I don't know exactly. They've obviously came to worship him, but we don't know if they truly made him the Lord of their life. But we can. But you have to worship him. In fact, I would say, if worship is our focus, guidance will be the byproduct. If we truly seek him, worship him, he will guide us, because he will be with us. We just got to keep worshiping him. And so the way we're going to end today is by singing Here I Am to Worship. And I like this psalm because the importance is, Lord, here I am. I'm here to worship you. God, I'm here in your presence. God, guide me. God, make me who you want me to be. Use me how you want to use me. I'm here to worship you. And so guide me. And so I don't know today if you're searching for guidance, if you have a major decision to make, or if you're just kind of going through the busyness of Christmas like many of us, and you need to take the moment just to worship God. Be reminded of his presence, and be reminded that he wants to guide you. You need to seek his guidance, and he'll guide you. Let's go.